Well, when I was looking at our texts for today on this Transfiguration Sunday, I was thinking again, as I sometimes do, well, what do we have to say about this that we haven't said before? And as I've also said, I mean, it's not so much a matter of coming up with something new for the sake of new. Sometimes all we need to do is remind ourselves of what we already know. But I was thinking about this passage on this day and came up with the question, what do we see? And there's lots of answers to that, of course. What do we see, what we're looking at, and that sort of thing. But one of the answers to it is that we see what we want to see, or we see what we expect to see. Might be another way to do it, or another way to put it. And I'm reminded of my brother-in-law flies quite a lot, and he's a little bit easier with flying now than he used to be, but I don't think he really likes it any as much as many do anyway. And on one flight, he had a window seat, which I don't know if that was better or worse for him, but anyway, he could look out if he wanted to. And they'd been flying through clouds, and he looked out and was trying to figure out what he was looking at, and it seemed to be some kind of an industrial installation or something like that on the ground. And as he was looking at it, he suddenly realized that what he was seeing was the wing of the airplane. There are clouds underneath. He'd lost parallax. That's what our eyes do, our binocular vision that gives us depth perception. Sometimes you can lose that. I lose it frequently if I'm looking at really busy wallpaper. I can't tell how far away it is. It's kind of disconcerting. But for Steve, as he was looking at that, he expected to see the ground, and so what he saw, he tried to turn into something that was on the ground, till suddenly he realized that, oh, wait, so this is actually the wing. I'm not looking at something 30,000 feet below, I'm looking at something about, I don't know, 6 feet away. Well, we see what we expect to see, which is just part of how we function in the world. It doesn't make us bad people that we sometimes are fooled by what we see or what we expect to see shows up. It's just part of what we do. The only problem with that is that sometimes seeing what we expect to see blinds us to what's actually there. It doesn't make any difference if you're looking out expecting to see the ground and see the wing of an airplane. I mean, it's not going to change anything. But how we see people sometimes can interfere with our ability to understand them or to know them fully. I'm sure we've all run across people in the political world or the political discourse. Highly partisan people tend to look at those on the other side in a particular way and hardly ever let them out. You'll see, or at least you'll hear reports of someone seeing the opposing team's candidate, or whatever you want to call it, helping somebody across the road, and they'll be looking for the hidden motive. Oh, they're probably hoping somebody would take a picture, show how wonderful they are. Well, maybe they just wanted to help somebody across the road. We see what we expect to see. If we expect people to behave in a particular way, we will often interpret their behaviors in that way. And in a way, there's nothing wrong with this. This whole idea of making these sort of quick evaluations or these ongoing evaluations, they simply help us function. Like when I meet somebody and I know they're about a particular age and they grew up in a particular place, if I know what they do for a living, I now know a number of things about them that helps us communicate. But if I think that I know them completely, I can miss very important things. We used to see this a lot in college students, sometimes even in high school students, where you'll put your fellow students or your children will put their fellow students into a particular box. And where I've seen this happen most frequently and where it actually happened to me is we put people who are athletic into a particular category. And so we look at these people who are on sports teams and they go off to represent the school and we figure, well, that's what they're good at. They're probably not very good students. And if they come up with an interesting insight, we just assume that they read it somewhere or they heard it from somebody else. And then maybe we get to know them a little bit better, or we're in a class that's a little bit smaller and we can see what they're actually like, and it turns out that, no, they're actually really smart. maybe smarter than I am. This happened to me when I was in college, and there was a very gifted athlete who was very good looking on top of it, which sort of made it really unfair. And then when I was in a class with him where I had the opportunity to see what he could actually do, he was well-read, he was really interested in what he was doing and got great grades because he worked really hard and was really smart. And so I'd put him in that category of athlete that says this is, you know, they're getting by on their athletic ability and in his case his good looks on top of it. But no, he was getting by because he was a really good student. And he was really nice too. You couldn't even hold all this stuff against him. He was just this really humble, nice guy who, you know, as far as I know, is doing great things wherever he is now. But if I would have looked at everything he did from a particular lens and reinterpreted everything he did from the perspective of saying, well, he's getting by on his athletic ability and his looks, I would have missed the real him, which would have been too bad. Because we see what we want to see or what we expect to see. If we only see what we expect to see, we won't get any nasty surprises, but we won't get any good ones either. And when we think of the text that we have today, the disciples knew Jesus. They knew him well. They'd been with him for years. They knew who he was. They knew what he was. They knew he was Messiah. They knew he was God made flesh. They knew this, that he was simultaneously fully human and fully God. They didn't know it in its entirety. Well, we don't. Nobody does because it's beyond us. But they knew what was going on. So why were they so surprised at the transfiguration? These people had quite possibly been there when Jesus was baptized, when the Holy Spirit came upon him as a dove, and they heard God speaking from heaven. And yet, once again, they were completely stunned. It's because we see what we want to see. And the disciples saw what they wanted to see also. And they saw Jesus as they expected him to be. But there was still something lacking. We don't know all the theological ins and outs or subtleties of the transfiguration. We don't know whether it was a confirmation of Jesus' claims or a confirmation of prophecy. But what we do know is that after that, the disciples were never the same as they were before. Because that's what always happens when our vision is suddenly expanded. I could never look at that classmate the same way again once I got a better idea of who he was. And I'm sure all of us have had that similar kind of experience where someone that we expect to be a particular kind of person turns out to be something else or something more. One of my coworkers, just a guy, pleasant, you know, chatted when you ran into him in a hallway or something, did his work. He was in a band, a good enough band that he quit his job a while ago. So he could tour full time. Well, that changed how I thought about him. I mean, it didn't put everything he'd done into some kind of strange, was he really serious or anything. It was just, no, and suddenly I had a fuller view of him. Whenever we get past what we expect to see or what we want to see, it increases our understanding of what we're looking at. And for the disciples who were on that mountain, for Peter, James, and John, who knew Jesus, who had said they were going to follow Jesus and did follow Jesus, they saw something more that expanded their understanding beyond even what they had already. Did it turn their worlds upside down? No, it didn't. These things often don't. But they give us a different perspective that does change everything we see without sort of throwing everything up into the air and making everything absolutely brand new. When you discover new talents in your friends or see new talents in your children, it's not like you're suddenly looking at them as if they're brand new people, but you're seeing more of them. the disciples saw more of who Jesus was and what was actually happening. It's easy for us to take another run at Peter here, where he talks about putting up tents for people and that. But can you imagine how absolutely stunning it must have been to experience this? I think that the fact that Peter could say anything at all was pretty amazing. I'm pretty sure I would have just been completely struck dumb. Because that's usually what it is. That's when we get these radical changes in people, when we suddenly find out that this person who we thought was just an athlete turns out to be a great student or whatever else, usually about all we can do is go, wow. Or say something equally eloquent like, huh. I think Peter did pretty well. Because he was trying to fit this new reality into the old reality. Because that's what we do. We try to bring these things together. And often what we find is that our previous view, whether it's of God or of our friends, is too small for who they really are and what they really are. Our view of them limits them to what they can do for us and with us. And that's too bad. And as I was looking at Transfiguration Sunday and thinking that we have an opportunity to look at this interesting and somewhat surprising text, and we can ask ourselves the question, what do we see? Maybe another answer to the question is that we don't see enough. That it's up to us to look a little bit deeper into the people around us, into the situations around us. And perhaps for us, we should look into who Jesus is a little bit deeper. In one sense, I don't think it's possible for us to know Jesus as well as Peter, James, and John did. There's something about us in our essential human beingness that when we can't interact with people in the same way, we can get to know them, but I don't think it'll ever be the same as what Peter, James, and John did. But their understanding of Jesus could be expanded, and so can ours. One of the things that we find when we discover new things about those we know well, new talents, new experiences, whatever it might be, what I have found, I don't want to project this on you, but this may sound familiar to you as well. What I've found is that when I'm surprised by what those people I know well can do, it's because I haven't really been looking at them. I haven't really been paying attention. I haven't really been watching them as they've been growing, as they've been adding this new talent or this new interest or this new ability, whatever it is. Because I've got them in this convenient category. And there's nothing wrong with people putting people in categories. It's efficient. It helps us connect in many ways. But when we think the category is the totality of the person, that's when we run into problems. And when I'm surprised by an interest of my children, or my coworkers, my friends, it's often because I just haven't been watching them. I haven't really been paying attention. I've said, this is a comfortable relationship I've got. This person is like this, and that's okay. And it is okay. But suddenly, when my view of them is expanded, I sometimes think, I wish I would have been watching closer as this grew in them. Not because I don't like the surprise of suddenly seeing it, but what might I have gotten if I would have talked to them about this new interest of theirs? This new ability that they're trying to add. It doesn't mean that the relationship was impaired before. It just means it wasn't as rich as it could have been. And for those of us who have been people of faith for a long time, I think the same thing can happen with us with Jesus. The good news is that we're not limited by that in our human relationships or in our relationship with Christ. If we want to, we can look at Jesus, look to Jesus, to understand him better, to get to know him more. It probably won't come in the form of a vision of Moses and Elijah. We probably won't hear God himself speaking, although visions do still happen, and there's nothing wrong with hoping for such a thing. But in the meantime, we can expand our view, we can enrich our view of who Jesus is by revisiting those stories that we know well about Jesus in the Gospels, for example. And maybe through our imagination, through creativity, put ourselves in the story and see if we discover new things about him and about our relationship with him. Because we can. Our already rich relationships with people or with Christ can always be made richer. And maybe that's something that we should set our minds to. Maybe we'll look back next year in Transfiguration Sunday, and maybe we'll look at the difference between how we know Jesus today and then is almost as significant as Peter, James, and John on that mountain. What do we see? Well, we see what we want to see. We see what we hope to see. Sometimes we see what we think we see. That's what optical illusions are all about. But we can always see better. I put it to all of us as a charge to try and see Jesus more as he truly is. Until such time as we see him in his glorified self and know him fully, even as we are fully known, as Paul says in Corinthians. Let's see how much more of Jesus we can know and how much more of him we can understand. How much better our relationship can be with him. Because there is more to see. There is more about Jesus than we know today. And all that we learn, all that we add to our understanding of him, all that our relationship deepens will just make it a better, richer experience for us. Maybe even for him. What do we see? Let's do our absolute best to see Jesus as he truly is. Amen.